Well, we got some bicycles, and one of the three of us was a Canadian. He wanted to go off on his own. He felt he'd be more secure. And Jerry and myself we had to go through the Russian lines, and that was a nightmare, and I won't talk to you about all of that. It was miserable watching people get slaughtered. But we got to this airfield, and it was deserted. And I went from one revetment. Are you folks familiar with a revetment? I bet you aren't. Some of you are probably not. Revetments are a lot of things they would build, and you were big enough, they were U-shaped, and you could park an airplane. They were built of rocks or sand or anything that get to go up to above the height of the tail of the airplanes that were being sheltered and camouflaged so that our forces could fly over with reconnaissance aircraft and not know that there were 50 or so airplanes on that particular airfield. Well, they were all practically deserted, and we got to this airfield, we were on our bicycles, just the two of us, and Jerry Ennis, my pal at the time, he said, "What are you planning on doing?" I said, "Well, what we're going to do is," I said, "we're going to stay here in a revetment." I went from one revetment after the other, trying to find an airplane I thought might be flyable. I found one, had a lot of bullet holes in it, but nothing that could keep it from flying. I checked the engine all around the cowling. Everything looked like it had never been touched by except on the wings and the tail where bullet holes could come through the skin. And I thought, it's flyable, it's serviceable. And now I got in it, and who could start a Focke-Wulf 190? Well, I had the good fortune, there was a prisoner in the camp who had been assigned to Wright Field as a test pilot, and they sent him to England to evaluate the captured airplanes that the British had from the Germans. And he had just finished 10 hours of flying the Focke-Wulf 190, and he talked General Kepner into letting him go on a combat mission, got shot down on his first mission. And he was in the prison camp. And somebody told me they thought he had been at Wright Field. So I had wanted to get an assignment to Wright Field. That's where flight testing took place for our air forces. And that was my ambition after the war. And so I introduced myself to this major, and we became well acquainted. And finally he shared with me that was his mission, and he wasn't supposed to have been in combat. And the Germans didn't know that he had all of this ability. And I said, "I've dreamed of trying to escape from here and get an airplane and get out." I said, "Tell me about that 190, because I'd watched them flying over us a lot there in the prison camp." And he said, "Okay." So we sketched it out in the sand, and he put the instrument panel and everything. And then several months went by before the war got down to where it was thinned out, and I was able to escape. I got in that 190, and I looked at it, and everything that Gus had told me about starting the airplane and what all these things were, everything was in German, of course, and I couldn't make heads or tails about all the different things, and it was very different from my airplanes. The result was that I couldn't find a parachute, I couldn't find a seat cushion, and this airplane looked like it was ready to fly. All the rest I looked at didn't look like they were flyable. And I sat in it, and I went down into the seat because there's no parachute or cushion, and I could just barely see out over the side of the railings of the canopy. And I thought, that's enough to see out. And so I gave Jerry the gun, and I said, next person that walks by here in coveralls like he's a mechanic, I'm going to put the pistol on him and motion him in. And so it happened, this fellow walked by, and I identified him as a mechanic, and I said, "Halt," and he stopped and looked around, and I motioned for him to come in. I had the pistol on him. He came into the revetment, and then we couldn't communicate. And I was trying to tell him what I wanted him to do to help me start the airplane. He couldn't understand it at all. And so I told Jerry, I said, gosh, I looks like I'll not be able to pull it off. And he didn't want to fly again. When he was shot down, he was injured and decided he'd quit flying forever. And he said, I think we better get on our bicycles and start hiking. I said, I'm not giving up. And he said, you know, I taught French in a high school before I joined the service. And he said, I'm going to try my French out on him. Well, lo and behold, this mechanic could understand French. And so he told him what I wanted to do. And he told him also that he would kill him if I didn't get airborne. I got in the airplane, and he sat up on, actually almost laid on the wing, and reached down, and then he started it up for me, because I couldn't have done it with the knowledge, little bit of knowledge I had, because I'd forgotten just about everything that Gus Lundquist had told me. And I got the thing cranked up, and I didn't taxi out to a runway, because I felt if there were any guards around there, they'd have at me, knowing that the airplane was brought in there for one reason. That was because they wanted to capitulate. And so I just ran the engine up to full power in this revetment. And it was earth-shattering noise, really. And they had a canopy over the top to camouflage it so it wouldn't be noticed as an airplane refuge. And so I went right out of there, right across the grass. And I had a sigh of relief when I lifted off the grass and hadn't damaged or hurt anything. And then the reality of my stupidity hit me. You got swastikas on each wing. You can't see out. And some second lieutenant who dreams of shooting down a German airplane has got one hell of a target. It was an overcast, fortunately about 4,000 feet. I went up to the bottom edge of it so that if I did get attacked by one of those second lieutenants, I could pull it up into the clouds and he'd have trouble finding me. And so that's the way I headed out. And I just had nothing but a compass. That I knew that if I went to the north, I would hit to the north, go to the North Sea, and I couldn't dare land in any part of Germany, because they always, when they abandoned their airfield, they would mine the runway. And when you landed on them, and we lost a lot of people across North Africa that way when we first overtook the new territories. And so I knew I had to see windmills, because the Dutch people hated the Germans with a passion. And by the time I saw windmills, I had no opportunity. I couldn't find a runway. I couldn't find anything. Fuel gauges were all on entry and bouncing. And I thought, boy, it's going to quit on me, and I better find a place to put it down. And I looked over a big area, and I was in the Zuider Zee area. I didn't know it at the time, of course. And it looked like a smooth enough place that I could put it in on with the gear down. So I elected to put the gear down and made the landing, good landing, but I had not seen from the air. The weeds were up about so high, and there was a ditch, and I could see it coming up, leaning out the side, and I thought, if I hit that ditch, I'll be upside down, nobody to rescue me. If it catches fire, I'll be trapped inside, and if it doesn't, I can smother to death underneath there. I'll ground loop it, which would boot full rudder, and collapse the landing gear. And that's exactly what I did. I skidded right up to the edge of this creek bed, and I sat there and thought, you've got to be the dumbest aviator in the whole world. And here's nobody. I'm the forest on one side of me, but I had seen a little dirt road on the other side. And so I thought, After I sat there for a few minutes, feeling sorry and stupid,